Spring? Is that you? Warmer temps mean new Allbirds styles. Meet the Super Light Collection, the lightest ever shoes from Allbirds, now in fresh colors. They've designed must-have travel styles for when you need to jet. The lighter-than-air feel and barely-there fit makes these shoes some of the most packable styles ever. That means more comfort and less baggage. Take the Super Light Tree Runner on your next adventure. Its cushy, lightweight foam midsole supports every step, and the extra outsole traction gives you the grip to just go for it. The eucalyptus fiber upper adds next-level breathability to keep you going all day. Plus, the Super Light Tree Runner is comfortable and ready to go right out of the box. So, what can you do in a super light shoe? What can't you do is the better question. And because they're super packable, the real question is, where are you taking them? Experience how Allbirds redefines comfort. Visit allbirds.com and use code SUPER24 for a free pair of socks with a purchase of $48 or more. That's allbirds.com, code SUPER24.
The Koi Gig Pod.
I then had to then fake an injury because I didn't want to tell people that I was pregnant until the 12-week scan.
It's mad to think of, really. It seems kind of archaic.
Subscribe to the feed in the OTB Sports app now. The Koi Gig Pod on OTB Sports. In association with Cadbury, a player and a half deserves a glass and a half of support.
Top of it, goal!
It's what dreams are made of.
They are going to the World Cup Finals!
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Koi Gig Podcast. I am Kathleen McNamee and I am joined as ever by former Ireland internationals Karen Duggan and Emma Byrne. The WSL is back at long last. It took about a month, but we got there. How did you guys fill your time while there was no, well, there was football happening, but there was no WSL happening?
I didn't fill my time. I've just been sitting, waiting patiently for it to come back.
We survived. I mean, it was really busy. I don't know where the time went. I mean, Christmas, obviously, is a bit of a crazy time. Does anyone actually enjoy Christmas anymore? Just a question out there.
Do you enjoy it? A dark thought to start off the podcast
with. It's a very January thought.
I don't know. I just find it one of the most stressful times of the year, and I don't know why. I have loads of time off, so it should be relaxing. But it's just the whole getting home and trying to see everybody and running up the stairs for me ma. Emma, can you get this? Can you get that? Every 30 seconds. Like, what does she do when I'm not there? I'd love to know.
There is a lot of like just general running around. I find at Christmas, which isn't very fun. Like I came back after a bit of time off and everyone in the office was like, oh, did you have a nice chill Christmas? And I was like, I think I spent more time on the road and like going to see people than I did actually seeing people over that time.
You're just too popular, girls. Too popular. That's your problem.
I'm going on holidays next year. I don't care. And I say this every single year, but next year I'm going on holidays. I was watching Alex Scott watching her. No. Well, that sounds a bit strange. I was on Instagram and her feed popped up and she was like in Barbados. And I was like, oh, it's just the best idea ever. So, yeah, I'm going to go on holidays. So I'll be in Wexford next Christmas if anybody's looking for me.
It's a little cabin to yourself and bring your dogs.
Oh, yeah. The dogs are what stress me out the most because I have to drive everywhere with them, driving to Barcelona. And, you know, I was in Qatar. I'll mention that again.
Oh, you didn't mention.
No, I was there, yeah. The stress was the dogs, my poor doggies. Who's going to mind them? Where, you know, how is it they going to survive without me? Well, yeah, they're fine. They're still alive, so all good.
So this is technically not our first podcast back from the new year because we did have a podcast that went out last week and that we recorded just before Christmas. And it went everywhere, which I don't think any of us expected. It was covered by the BBC, Times, Telegraph, and it just goes to show what an important topic it was to raise. And obviously, hopefully we want to do lots more stuff about that for the rest of the year. If you have missed it, it's with Emma Mitchell. You can get it across any of the usual podcast places. But did you guys expect such a strong reaction from people to it? Because I really didn't. Like, I hoped that people would see how important all the points she was raising were. But I suppose I just didn't expect it to catch fire quite as much as it did.
Caught fire.
Caught fire.
But you know what? When we were like, we were talking about doing it. I knew it was a bit of a, you know, not a sensitive subject. For me, that means that you shouldn't be talking about it. No, we should be talking about it. But I knew it was kind of, you know, it was a little bit delicate as well. Like, if you're in a club, you don't want to talk badly about the club because it is your future, basically. So I was kind of aware of that, but I wasn't expecting Mitchie to be so brutally honest. Yeah.
She didn't hold back, just, to be fair,
which is good. No, it's brilliant. She's brilliant. Mitchie's the best person to speak to about any of these kind of things. It was really good. I think there's been huge positive feedback, and Mitchie has said that herself. I just think, you know, now is the time to push forward with it. And I don't want Mitchie to be just that person who did a podcast, and she doesn't either. She wants to push forward with it. She wants to try and improve the situation for everybody. She wasn't just having a little moan about her own personal case. She wants to improve it, and she knows, she understands that it's a subject that clubs don't really know much about, and they don't have the proper personnel in there to deal with it, like whether it's doctors or, well, doctors should be, but physios and rehabilitation specialists. So she just wants to push it forward, basically, and that's like the good thing that came from it, because if you expose it, obviously, you know, people have to tackle it. So it was good, just very positive.
Yeah, no, I was quite surprised at how positive all the reaction was around it. You know, I think most people were just really related to her experience and really wanted to like talk more about why that was the case and should there not be more things going on. And like, I had so many requests from people across like Ireland, England, Scotland to go on and like talk about it more. And I was like, I'm not the person that should be doing this. You know, you need to talk to women that have actually experienced these things. I can just tell you what Emma told me. And beyond that, you know, yeah, I'm not the right person to do this. Well, but
this is it. That's it. You need to speak to mammies. I mean, I've had loads of phone calls and requests, and I'm like, why would you want me to talk about it? I have two dogs. That's it. Those are my babies. I can tell you
have a dog.
The stress of having two dogs and trying to work is a stressful one. But yeah, they need to speak to the players that have had babies, obviously, and they need to bring those together and find a way to interact with them and get them their opinion on how to improve situations. Yeah.
Well, like I said, this is something that we are very happy to keep talking about. So if anyone listens to the podcast, or, you know, you can be a mother, you could be someone who is looking at how footballers come back from pregnancy and how they deal with having a baby at the same time. If you are interested, please do get in touch with us, because we would love to do a bit more about this. Now, Emma, we already knew you were kind of famous, but you've become even more famous because you featured twice on the Emirates. You wrap around, I hear. Not just once, twice. You're when that much of a legend.
When someone starts with that, I'm a little bit worried. We've just gone past Christmas, so I'm thinking there were lots of like nights out and stuff. it's pretty awesome. I haven't seen it like... Personally, I haven't seen it, but it looks really, really cool. I couldn't make it down to the opening, unfortunately, but the girls were texting and sending me loads of photos and stuff. It's great. It's just, I think it's just a really cool thing that they've done, just bringing, showing that, you know, they support the women play for their club, and they appreciate and respect them, and just putting that them on the par, on a par with the men. And I think it's just a really nice gesture. And yeah, it's really, and again, really positive feedback from it. Yeah.
And again, really, I thought it was nice touch of the Arsenal men's team to have a tribute to Beth Mead's mom as well, like kind of fostering that one club mentality there, which is great to see.
Yeah, no, it definitely is a vibe. Like, we had Tim Stillman, who writes for Ars Blog and podcast about the Arsenal women's team, quite a lot on the show last week. And he was saying that he was part of the consultation process for the wraparound. And he went in kind of ready to, you know, fight the corner and be like, these are the teams or like the women's players that we should have. And he was like, it was like pretty much a consensus the moment they started talking that they knew which teams and players they wanted to highlight. I didn't have to fight for it at all. And he was like, this makes such a nice change from the normal that the club had already accepted that it was going to happen. It was just a case of picking which was the right teams or the right players. And obviously our fine MMA cut.
I imagine that was really difficult, you know, trying to pick players when there are so many legends. I mean, the women's team going back all those years. I did notice that Tim had mentioned that he was afraid of me or something like that. I mean, what's going on there?
He did say that. He said you and Katie he was slightly intimidated by. And I was like, so is it just brilliant Irish women when I was talking to him afterwards? And he was like, yes, that's exactly what
I meant. Glad Kate, I'm glad Katie's in there because, the, you know, safety and numbers and all that. That's what I thought you were going to start with. I was trying to think when I've met Tim that he could possibly be afraid of me.
It's just your aura, Emma. It's your aura.
Maybe it's just your on-pitch persona, and you know, if he actually got to a more one-on-one.
She's terrifying off the pitch as well.
That's not true. It's not true. Karen, actually, we had a night out over Christmas. Do you want me to start talking about that?
No, sorry, my connection's going there. It was a short night for me.
Yeah, I wasn't too far behind you, to be honest.
Sounds like a dangerous combination, I have to say.
Well, after trying to climb up on the moose's head on the wall, I think everybody just kind of like sent me home. So I was like, that's it, that's enough. It's my one night, my one big night out of the year.
See, it'd be worth not going on holiday for that next year, just so that you can have your one big night once again.
Yeah, and away from people who know me, which is the main thing.
The Koi Gig Pod and OTB Sports is in association with Cavalry FC, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. Coming up next, we will be looking at some of the top transfers that have happened in the window so far. So the transfer window hasn't officially closed as of yet. That's not until the end of January. But already there has been some interesting moves, some bigger ones, some smaller ones. Actually, when you look at it, there are just some very particular WSL teams who have really gone all out in this transfer window. And I think probably one of the most interesting places to start is the Beth England Chelsea to Tottenham move. I mean, we've said it for quite a long time on this podcast that she needs a move, and obviously ahead of the World Cup as well, it was even more important. But I don't think I expected Tottenham to be the team putting out a reported £250,000 for a player. I mean, it's great to see that that sort of stuff is happening more in the game. But yeah, I was just quite surprised. I don't know how you guys felt about it.
Yeah, it's a big money move. She did need to go somewhere where she was going to be playing. I suppose on her part, it means staying in London. She might like that. Just based on how Spurs season has been going, it's not been their best season. So I was a bit surprised by that. But she could have the kind of effect that Rachel Daly did for Aston Villa, maybe, and be that kind of figurehead for them and maybe turn their fortunes around. No, it didn't happen this week, but I'm sure that's...
Well, she probably should have. Like, she got the one, but she definitely missed opportunities later on in the game to level it up for them.
Yeah, she did. I mean, she should have scored. And if I was the manager, I'd be thinking of that pressure that is now on Rhianne Skinner for paying that money. So I'd be thinking more pressure for her, more pressure for Bethany England. Mm-hmm. But she did score. I mean, that's all you would want from your sign in that first game. I think it's a brilliant move for Tottenham. I'm not sure it's a great move for England, to be quite honest, just because of, you know, how they play. She's going to have to be involved in the build up a lot. She can't be that kind of poaching player that just stays up as a number nine. It's exactly what Tottenham needed. As I said, more pressure on them because they're going to be expected to do a little bit more. But I just think it's a really good sign from Tottenham. Like, they are pushing forward because so many clubs, you know, you wonder, where do they want to be? Do they have the support, as in the money? I mean, that's what it comes down to, isn't it? How much money have they been given to go and to try and sign players to improve? So I think it's a good sign from them that they are supporting the women's team, and they do expect their women's team to be winning things and higher up in the league.
That's the thing that I never totally understand about Tottenham, because they kind of make these big statement signings. So like, you have the Beth England transfer, which is like the highest amount of money ever played for a player in the WSL. You have them bringing in someone like the likes of Alex Morgan. Like, I know that was only for half a season and it was kind of to help her get back after having a baby, but they just have these like random moments where they sign someone that's quite impressive or someone you just wouldn't expect to go there. But the rest of their signings don't always seem the most cohesive, or they don't seem all that targeted to what maybe the team actually needs in a situation. Like, I think Beth England is obviously a good striker, but like you were saying, Karen, I don't know if that's exactly what Tottenham needs. They need someone who can actually help with the build-up play, someone who can be a lot more involved than she's necessarily used to doing. And that was like one of the major problems for them at the weekend with her, because she wasn't as involved and she wasn't getting the same service. So it just, yeah, I'm not fully convinced by it, but maybe that will change when someone like Ashley Neville comes back. She was suspended at the weekend, so she wasn't there.
Yeah, and again, like, most of the movement will happen during the summer, so maybe the fact that they've been able to attract Beth England, maybe that will kind of bear more fruit and people will want to join Spurs, kind of see that they're going in the right direction. So it could be the start of it for them, but again, it just depends on money and how much is thrown behind them.
Yeah, and like, I think with Spence coming in, with Drew Spence, I think they expected a lot from her in that midfield, and it hasn't really been happening,
no,
to be honest. And James Ancard, James, she's a decent player. You know, she's a decent player to have in your team, but she's not going to set the game alight, is she? So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Kathleen. They need a midfielder in there to dictate it and to really link up that defence to forward movement.
And then one club there's been a lot of coming and going from is Arsenal. With losing both Mead and Miedema, I think people have said, you know, they need some attacking power. They haven't necessarily gotten that. They've signed Pelova and then Catherine Kuhl, brought back Gio Quirez from Everton. She was out there on loan. And then obviously Jordan Nobbs left after 12 years at the club. I'm not ashamed to say I shed a little tear at some of the videos that the WSL posted, because I was just like, this is one of the most iconic Arsenal players in my mind, like from when I first started supporting them. So yeah, it was just someone who's been there for a long time and you're like, Jesus, I don't really know an Arsenal without you.
Well, for me, it's about a year too late. Well, not too late. It's a year later than it should have happened. I was really happy to hear it. Obviously, yeah, sad that Arsenal are losing her, and sad for Jordan as well. That must have been a really difficult decision for her. I know.
Especially not getting that final game or anything, kind of that final moment to...
Yeah, I mean, that happens in football. But just speaking to Jordan, like last year, I was like, come on, Jordan, you have to leave. Like, I'm sorry, I was trying to convince her just for her own sake and her own England career and stuff like that. And it was just really difficult for her. She didn't want to, but she had to do it. And I think Villa is a really good choice for her, actually. Yeah. And I think it's perfect for Villa, because it's exactly what they need. They needed that player to link up, that box-to-box player, to allow Daly to stay a little bit higher up and her to be that connection with Daly. And she did well. Jordan did well. It will take her a little time to get into it. Like, Jordan needs to be invested emotionally as well. So it'll take her a little bit of time to get there. But a fantastic sign, and sad for Arsenal. But that's what happens. A player like that can't sit on the bench. No. It just can't happen.
No, and I definitely, like, as sad as I was, there was a part of me that for a long time has thought that she should move on and wanted that for her, just to, I don't know, she deserved to be getting a lot more game time than she was, and especially after all the injuries she's had. And, like, I looked it up and she's actually only played one match, full match in a major tournament, and I was like, surely that's not right. But, like, it is just, like, through her injuries have come at, like, such bad times that she's missed out so much. And I was like, God, that really is shocking. So hopefully, as you say, I do think Aston Villa is a really good place for her, and I think it's a really smart signing from them. I mean, bringing her and Lucy Staniforth in, who also slipped in quite easily at the weekend. They're building a side there. Like, I don't know if it's going to come this season, but if they sign a couple of other smart players during the summer, they could really be challenging for those top positions in a year or two, I think.
I think so. I think it's only a matter of time, whatever about signing. I think that the squad they have now can do it.
Yeah.
they will need time to gel. It's a new midfield. It's exactly what we were talking about, though, at the start of the season. Like, their midfield is the problem. They have an amazing forward, one of the best in the league now, and left back, whatever you want to call it. And they have a good defence. It's decent. The midfield was the problem. And it's, I think we're going to see, they're going to nick a few points over the next few weeks.
Yeah, they just look so much more impressive than your Brightons and your Reddings and stuff like that. They're a league, they're cut above them now. And I think they can kick on a good bit. Yeah, they can kind of follow the kind of Man United model nearly. They can keep attracting big players.
That is the one that most people seem to be kind of like, definitely lower down the league. I feel like United have shown a path to actually being a really successful club without necessarily spending the sort of money that a Chelsea might or a City might in developing their team, even Arsenal, but they're probably less so on the spending side of things. In terms of that kind of attacking area for Arsenal, they obviously have brought Kiros back, but she's quite like still quite a young player, not that developed. Do you think that it's essential for Arsenal to get someone in before the end of the transfer window, considering the fact that they have lost the kind of mid-mid dynamic? Like, I saw a stat from last season, they were involved in 66% of all of Arsenal's goals, which is quite a lot.
Yeah, it's huge, but they still do have options, and they have a versatility in their play that they can kind of bring players in. I mean, even Katie being on the bench yesterday, like, that's madness to have someone of that quality on the bench. But it just shows that they do have a squad there. Obviously, Hurtig kind of came in, missed a few chances, got herself in the right positions, but missed gilt-edged chances. So I think it's very hard to find a striker like Vivian Miedema who just scores goals for fun. So I don't know who they could get to kind of fill those boots. It's not that easy.
No.
I mean, there aren't just two Ballon d'Or nominees hanging around the place who want to come join.
No, they won't replace them. But I just want to go back to the Katie McCabe situation. I was shocked because I was doing a game in Serie A, and I was just about to go on as they put up the team for Arsenal. I was like, where's Kate McCabe? And I didn't have enough time to actually look at it properly, so because I had to go and do the game. But afterwards, I was looking through, I was like, cannot believe you'd have Katie McCabe on the bench against Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And I know Chelsea and Emma Hayes would be very happy looking at that team sheet and seeing her on the bench. That would have been relief for Emma Hayes, as far as I'm concerned. Lena Hurtig, she's a good player. She's a good player to have on the bench if you want to switch something up. For me, not a starting player. Put Katie there. Katie can play left back, even though I don't like saying that, left back. She can play left wing. She can play number nine. She can play left side forward. She can play right side forward. You have to have her in the team. Just because you want to play Steph Catley at left back, it does not mean you put her on the bench. You put her.
I like Steph Catley left back, but I want Katie up higher.
Yeah, like, I don't like Katie left back, so Catley's perfect in there. Yeah. But you still put her on the pitch, right? I mean, she can even play number nine. She can play that position. So I wouldn't say they have to sign more players. Kiros is an unbelievable player, by the way. She is young. She's more of a playmaker. She can play number nine, but she likes to get involved in the play. She's going to be a player. Probably better than Lena Hurtig, to be quite honest. And then, of course, Victoria Pilova is, for me, a decent signing, but she's not going to be like one of the best in the leagues, but a good signing. But again, for me, Katie's got to play wherever.
This is what I was wondering about with the whole thing, because like, when I saw it, I was like, immediately my mind went, she must be injured, because I can't remember a WSL game that Katie hasn't started unless she's either been suspended or injured. And I was like, oh no, please tell me this isn't the case. Then to when he bring her on as well in the 81st minute, like, that also seemed bizarre to me when Arsenal didn't really have all that much of an attacking threat for the majority of the game, kept missing chances, even if it's just for like the set piece alone, or like those edge of the box shots that she takes that are incredible. It's not me being entirely biased in the whole situation, but I was like, this is a very strange decision from Jonas Eidevall. So I'll say Mark Skinner there.
Yeah, and Chelsea were poor. Arsenal just lacked the kind of cutting edge and a bit of aggression, which
aggression. I know a player who gets booked the minute she comes on the pitch. No, the only thing I can think of is that Ada Vell was worried that she might get sent off. But still, it's not a reason not to start a player. If you're playing and she's...
Top of the table clash, no.
No, if she gets booked early on and she's looking like she's going to get booked in, okay, take her off. I get it. And I'm not saying Katie wouldn't have got sent off. She might have. But you want that player on the pitch. And the fact is, when it comes down to it, Chelsea were extremely happy that she was on the bench.
Mm-hmm. No, completely. And we will look into that a little bit more in our next segment, where we are going to dive into all the WSL action which happened over the weekend. So a month after the WSL took their Christmas break, which, depending on which coaches you listen to, some were like, it's great, we needed that time. Other ones were like, it was a little bit long, didn't really enjoy it, don't think it helped my team. The WSL returned at the weekend. I'm going to start with Aston Villa and Tottenham, which is 2-1 result to Aston Villa, purely just because I really enjoyed some of the headlines that came out of this one. Daly and Daly scored, and there was lots of talk of Dilly and dallying around the pitch in the papers, which I thought was excellent. And
very good.
Like, Aston Villa don't have some sort of nickname for that duo for the rest of the time they're playing together, I will be very sad, and I think we should just coin one ourselves. But yeah, bright start for Tottenham, but then 2 goals in 4 minutes for Aston Villa just sealed the deal. Spurs, I think if I was to look at a manager that's probably the most in trouble at the moment, it's probably going to be Jan Skinner. I think, like, even with Leicester, they've changed things around so much. Brighton,
Liverpool.
Well, I think Liverpool have done enough with coming up that they're probably okay. Like, I know Matt Beard said that he's in a relegation battle now, but I don't think they're quite there yet. Like, I still do think they have the potential, especially if Stengel comes back, to scrape enough wins to be fine. And I think Liverpool want a manager like Matt Beard in there to develop the team and grow the team. But I'm also happy to hear any complaints the other way.
I don't know. I we'll get on to Liverpool in a minute. Much to unpick there as well. Yeah, for Villa, I mean, Daly and Daly are superstars. They play really well together. Now, Emma, I'd be looking at the keeper possibly for the second goal and the Daly strike. But when they need them to pop up, those two have just been brilliant all season for them.
I'm trying to think. So many games. What's what? Describe the second goal for me. I'm trying to think. For Daly's goal.
No, for Daly's goal.
The names make it very confusing, I have to say.
So their first goal, describe it. Describe it to me. Honestly.
Shot at the edge of the box, and it just kind of like, it was a good distance out. Keeper probably could have gotten across.
No, sorry, I can't remember. It must have been.
It wasn't that good, obviously. It definitely was the keeper's fault, so if you don't even remember it.
No, I feel like if it definitely was the keeper's fault, Emma would have been straight on it.
Yeah, I'm thinking I would have noticed that. No. I mean, they're brilliant together. I love watching them. I think Daly's been absolutely fantastic. From the first game, from when I watched her play against City, I'm like, what? Who's this player? Because she kind of came in under the radar. And I was like saying to the girls, like, who's Daly? She's good. She's quality. And they're like, who? Yeah. And then the more games they played, you're just seeing how quality she was. And we spoke about it as well. The problem for both of those players is that the transition from defence to attack, and now that they have those players in midfield, Jordan Nobbs and Staniforth, they can afford to play a little bit higher up. Daly doesn't need to drop in to get involved, and Daly can stay that little bit higher up in that number 10 role. I thought they were the better team in the first half, but Spurs finished really, really well. Like, I was quite impressed with Spurs. Like, maybe that's a sign of things to come. And I think Molly Bartrip, for example, I thought she was brilliant at the back, who I wouldn't have really spoken about before, but I thought she was really good. Again, midfield kind of non-existent in there. That's a problem for them. Like, we've already spoken about at the start of the show. But yeah, I think you're right, Kathleen. I think Rhianne Skinner, especially with this signing of Beth England. It brings, you know, that amount of money. You're expected to do more with your team.
Yeah, well, you don't spend that amount of money on a WSL transfer and either not have it make an immediate impact or at least something that is like tangible for the team. And like I said before, I'm just not sure. I think they need to sign some other players that is going to increase activity in that midfield for Beth England to actually be supported enough to score. But I mean, she could turn around and be top scorer in the league like she was a couple of years ago. And you can play this soundbite and prove me completely wrong if that does happen. We've talked about it a little bit already, but Arsenal won, Chelsea won. This was an incredibly frustrating match to watch, I thought. Like, I was just screaming at the TV, being like, can someone please just score? It's surely not that hard. Chelsea didn't look good, and the difference was they had Sam Kerr on their team who was able to poach that last-minute goal. And also, it's the second time, I feel like, this season Arsenal have been done out by those last-minute goals, which do matter a lot when the title race is so tight.
Yeah, those Lena Hurtig chances, I think, really cost them in the end. You can't be given Chelsea an opportunity to come back into the game just because they have that kind of champion mentality where they can just stay in games and then pick something off even when they don't play well. Like you say, it's frustrating to watch. Like, Arsenal were by far the better team.
Chelsea do it all the time. They've won titles doing it. Like, you look at them and you think, I don't like them. I don't think they're great. They don't really have a game plan. Their build-up isn't great. What? How do they score goals? Long balls, Sam Kerr, basically. And of course, when Pernille's playing, it's different because she can get on the ball. She makes amazing runs. She just adds so much more to their team. Like, when she's not playing, you can really see the difference. And I think she is a huge, huge loss for Chelsea. But you can't depend on that one player. You can depend on Sam Kerr. No, you can't depend. And you have to have a way of winning games. And they have that way. But when you look at it, Arsenal and Man City, they just play way better football. They play way better football. It's nicer to watch. And, you know, you can... They could win. Arsenal could have won 4-0 yesterday. And I can't remember the last time I said that about Chelsea when they've played a big team, to be honest. So I'd worry about them. I worry about them in Champions League. Do they have a plan B? Do they know how to beat a team, like find their weaknesses? But I have to say, that cross from Kankovic.
Yeah, I was put it on a plate for Kerr.
She looks like a player. She looks like she's going to be absolutely top class. I think Emma Hayes said it as well, didn't she, that she's going to be an absolute worldie of a player. So I think we're going to see a little bit more of her.
Yeah, no, it was an incredible cross, and she was only on the pitch like what, 10-ish minutes at the time as well. So, you know, she had been sitting there watching everything unfold and was like the one player who actually came on and managed to do something for Chelsea. Musovic starting over Berger did not sound too happy about this after the match. Emma Hayes said about Muscovich that she's doing lots of work in the background on the training bench. She's very diligent, has attention to detail. Application has been absolutely brilliant, and she's deserving of the accolades she gets from today's game. And Berger was basically like, I'm fit, I'm training well. I don't know what, you'll have to ask the manager why I didn't start. And I was like, oh, there's a little bit of unhappy. But it's rare to hear that from a Chelsea player, because normally Emma Hayes has them so well-prepped, and we always talk about her player management as being so good that you don't really get those strains of discontent coming out of the club all that often.
Different for a goalkeeper. Let me just tell you that. It's different. If you aren't playing in the most important game of the season, you are number two. And I don't care what anyone says. You are second choice goalkeeper. And the fact is that Berger had two horrific games before Christmas.
Yeah.
However, you don't become a bad goalkeeper overnight. She had a bad time and she needs to get back into training and sort it out. Obviously, Emma has looked at Musovic and thought she's better in training. It's the only way, like, she's going to choose her. But for me, she's not better than Berger. And this could be very detrimental for Berger, because mentality is a huge thing for a goalkeeper. And if you don't feel like you're loved and you're wanted and you are the best thing in the world, your confidence is shattered a little bit. Yeah. But it is strange to hear her say that publicly.
Mm. competitive. Like I said, it's just so rare to hear that from a Chelsea player. And like, I think what she said was probably totally fair, in that she has every right to defend herself and be like, well, I think I'm playing great, so you're just going to have to ask Emma Hayes about that. But it's rare coming out of the Chelsea group.
It's a rare thing to say as well if you haven't been playing well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's strange, isn't it? If I had two absolute howlers, I'd be like, oh no, you need to put someone else in there. Yeah. And if I was asked why I'm not playing, I'd say exactly that, because
just
I
show the clips.
Like, pull them up on your phone and just be like,
what a stupid question. You've seen how I've been playing. So yeah, for me, that was strange for her to say that. Like, you have to be honest with yourself as well. And you have to understand that if you've had two bad games coming up against a big team, you have to be able to understand that maybe you're not in the right place.
And on goalkeepers, we had Everton against Reading, and neither of our international goalkeepers were on show again.
What's going to happen?
Exactly what we want in January of a new year.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's a big problem. But then again, you know, I was saying that last year.
And Courtney wasn't the best player.
Needed to play. It was imperative. And then she was absolutely excellent for Ireland. I think you can only get away with that for so long, to be quite honest. And in a World Cup, be interested to know, have there ever been any goalkeepers starting for their country and not starting for their club? I just hope Roslyn gets minutes, or else goes now, January.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Now is the time, maybe.
Yeah, and ask to go on loan or something. But where all the new sign-ins, you know, sign-ins from Bayern Munich, goalkeepers, where are you going to go?
Spurs? Yeah, I mean, are you talking about dropping to the Championship?
No.
You don't want to do that either, yeah.
Would you not want to drop to the Championship if you're going to one of the top teams and you're actually getting minutes?
It's not the same. There's a big gap between the Championship and
Difference now is either play nothing at all or play something. Would you not be better playing something?
I might. I'd move. I'd get the hell out of England. I would. I'd move. I'd move Sweden to a German league, or, you know, one of the top physical league, to play, even if it was a team on the bottom, you know, fighting relegation, even better. I would be dropping down a league here in England.
Manchester United 6, Liverpool 0. United's biggest ever win in the WSL. Karen could not look happier with herself.
Well, I don't think it said much about Man United, to be honest. Obviously, it was a good game for them to kind of shake off the cobwebs and continue a good run of form. They're obviously in second place now, the goal difference ahead of Arsenal. But Liverpool just looked all over the place. They couldn't clear their lines. They couldn't get out of their box. They were just kicking it off each other. And the goals came too easy, you know. And you could just tell their body language when the fourth went in and it was an OG. They were just resigned to a thumping, and that's exactly what it was. They just didn't have the resilience that they've shown against some of the bigger teams this year. The floodgates just opened. It was a poor day at the office for Liverpool, but obviously really good for United. Loads of different goal scorers. Galton was obviously out, so it was great to see Garcia coming in and getting on the score sheet. And Bagier again was incredible. Bagier, whatever you want.
Bagier. She's not bad, is she? She's decent.
Quality.
She's all right.
Yeah, and they had people coming off the bench. Thomas, Williams both scoring as well. So I think Skinner will be happy with the day's work there.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool, there's one thing that you might not be a great team. You might not be able to score many goals, but you must be able to defend. That's the basics. And, you know, at the start of the season, I was like, this is exactly what we're going to see from Liverpool. They're going to be very well organised. They've got a good defensive line back there, extremely difficult to break down. And this was just a horrible, horrible performance. They were completely disorganised all over the place. And that's one thing that Matt Beard will be really disappointed with.
He said himself after the match that, like, United had more desire, which shouldn't be the case.
He called it embarrassing as well. Like, his language was very, very strong, as was a lot of the players that came out afterwards. You know, when they posted on social media, the word embarrassing was thrown about quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure about all this post. Do I sound like Roy?
Yeah, it's very like, you know, when United men were doing it last season.
And all this kind of stuff. No.
Performance, we go again.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah, I mean, fine, you can recognise that you had a bad day. But, I mean, you just, there were mistakes. You have to correct the mistakes and you have to get into training and correct the mistakes and then break the game down and find out why. And then if my manager had said, I mean, I've never heard it from any of my managers, to be honest, that there was no desire. Imagine the Irish team, if we lost against the Germans.
We lived off desire our whole careers. That's all we had.
Like, that to me is the worst of the worst. I would be absolutely devastated if that
it's
was
kind of like the I'm not angry, I'm disappointed.
Yeah, my parents never used to say that to me. They used to be just angry. Yeah, but I mean, speaking to a couple of the players, they are absolutely devastated. Like, this is the worst. This is the lowest of the low. Like, they're at their lowest point in the season. So on a good note, it can only get better from here.
Yeah, nice easy trip to Chelsea at the weekend.
Get any worse than six, so...
Say that. Leicester got beat, what, 9 last season?
Oh, well. Well, I speaking of managers and being safe in their jobs, I think if it were more than 6, I think Matt himself would probably hang up his boots and walk away.
Yeah. One of the surprise results of the weekend, because it meant points finally on the board, was Leicester 3, Brighton 0. I think Brighton probably hoped that they would go into the new season, well, new half of the season, doing a bit better. New coach on board, Hope Powell gone, and instead 3 goals against a Leicester City that have literally...
The worst possible start for the new manager. I mean, to lose... to 3-0 to the team that are rooted to the bottom of the table and probably will get relegated. Oh, he has a lot of work to do. A lot of work.
As long as you can see change in any time quickly, really, either.
No, and, you know, they just seem to get worse. And as much as Hope Powell herself admitted, like, you know, it was difficult for her there to get results or whatever, I actually think it was the wrong thing to do, get rid of her. At least she knew her players, at least like she knew the mistakes and she knew how to arrange her players to the best of their ability. And I just think they're getting worse and I think they're going to get relegated. And I think that's a shame because Brighton is a fantastic club. Because you look at Leicester are down there, but they've made some decent signings over the last couple of weeks. I think they're only going to get better. And they might not nick points off the top 4, but it doesn't matter. As long as they're taking points from the clubs around them, they might survive it. I mean, they've signed a Bayern Munich goalkeeper. That alone is a massive signing for them.
Yeah, so the situation at the bottom of the table at the moment is Brighton have played 9 games, Leicester have played 10, Brighton are on 7 points and Leicester are on 3. So it would require Brighton to win a few more games Leicester to win a few more games and Brighton to lose a few more. But
Brighton will lose a few more. Based on the way they were playing at the weekend, they will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose it's just more of the goal scoring it probably comes down to. I mean, Leicester only have 5 goals so far this season, conceded 25. Brighton have at least scored 11, although they've conceded 32, so kind of
not great.
They do kind of balance each other out quite a bit. And then a final mention for City, who were 1-0 winners over West Ham. Bunny Shaw popping up once again, continuing her run to be the Golden Boot winner for this season. Puts them within 3 points of a Champions League place and they're now unbeaten in 11 games in all competitions. So City doing a very classic City thing of looking a bit chaotic at the start of the season and then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute.
They do it on purpose. They've done it 2 years in a row. But this is what I was worried about for City, is that break at Christmas, because they're horrible at coming back from breaks. Like, they just are terrible. And the way the game was going last night for a good period of time, I thought they weren't going to score. And I actually thought West Ham were going to nick one. And I thought, oh, this is it all over again. August, September start for City.
It definitely wasn't their most convincing performance, but I'd say he's just delighted to kind of get the 3 points and move on.
Like, seriously relieved.
Yeah.
Because West Ham actually defended quite well, and City just couldn't, you know, they couldn't break them down. And they've got amazing players. Like, you look at the players, but it's just poor decision making in the final area and poor decision making in general. Because if that were my team and I had a player like Bunny Shaw, I mean, she's just the most scary player ever to play against, I imagined. Because when she gets going and she faces that goal, you can't stop her. I mean, Sissoko, who I absolutely love just because she's just...
a lunatic.
Yeah, she's a lunatic. She was bouncing off her, like as if she wasn't even there. Bunny would just like put her hand out and she'd like go flying. And I'm like, oh my God, like she's a bit of a beast of a player, Sissoko as well. Millie Bright couldn't get round her. Millie Bright, I haven't seen one defender that is able to defend against her. And the one time, she had about three or four times she actually got the ball and went at them, and she created, she should have scored. She hit the bar, she hit the post. Great goal for them, by the way, really nice work goal, but it was one of the only times they played through the middle and through Dana Castellanos, which is what she does in that number 10 position. But in general, they should have created more chances. So that's the only thing I would have been, you know, a little bit worried about with them. But West Ham in general, I thought they did all right.
Mm.
Okay. I mean, they have something. There's something there that they can work on.
I think it's like you said, it's just that final third, and kind of they had like four or five players behind the ball most of the time. And when they were doing that, it was fine. But it was like, okay, well, what do we do now when we have the ball and we actually want to attack? That was where it was missing for them. And they just didn't seem confident going forward either. They seemed happier sitting back and almost inviting the pressure on, which you can't do against a team like City, because they do have the likes of Bunny Shaw, and they do just need that little moment to grab the goal, and then that's the points gone.
Yeah, I mean, they nearly scored, didn't they, in that the 6-yard scramble, and Leilu Habi cleared it off the line. If they'd have scored that goal, that would have been a disaster for City, because realistically, City were all over them. But you're right. But if you've got players like Lisa Evans, like more Lisa Evans than anybody, why are you asking her to defend?
No.
She can't be defending. I mean, we've seen it against Scotland. She played right back with Scotland against Ireland, which was great for us.
Yeah.
Don't put her in a defensive position. Push her up. You can even like unbalance the team, ask her to play a little bit higher, and then the other midfielders just to tuck round, because Assaye needed players up there, and Brignard's daughter was too deep as well. I mean, they played a very defensive game. It was, and it nearly worked for them if that's what they were looking for, a draw. The problem
was.
We will follow all the action as it continues throughout the season. But for today, thank you, Emma. And thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
And we will be back next Tuesday with another podcast for you all and all the WSL action.
The Koigig Pod on OTB Sports in association with Cadbury. A player and a half deserves a glass and a half of support.